OSHA Law Blog Live. This is Brad Hammack. I'm an attorney at the law firm of Jackson Lewis, and I'm joined today by my co-host of OSHA Law Blog Live, Nicole Winnett, who's also an attorney in the Washington, D.C. Region Office of Jackson Lewis. This is a new format for the OSHA Law Blog. It is a short, kind of quick, 10 to 15 minute, call it a podcast, where we try to get some good concrete information out to the subscribers of the blog and anyone else who happens to peruse the content. This is not meant to be a deep dive on any particular issue, but is certainly meant to highlight some of the key things that are going on with the Occupational Safety and Health Administration, and hopefully in a fun, easy-to-listen format. So this is actually our inaugural edition, and we look forward to having additional episodes of OSHA Law Blog Live up periodically throughout the year. So obviously, this is our first session. We wanted to focus on a couple of timely issues. The first related to OSHA record keeping, and the second related to influenza. These are things that employers are having to deal with now and be thinking about, and there are some big changes with respect to record keeping, at least, on the OSHA front. So we thought we'd devote the first episode to those issues. I'll be speaking about the record keeping issues, and Nicole will talk through the influenza issues. So there are two basic things that are happening right now on the OSHA record keeping front. As most folks are hopefully aware, OSHA has revised its record keeping rule, and these revisions went into effect on January 1, 2015. And principally, the largest, most significant impact on employers relates to the reporting requirements of OSHA's record-keeping rule. Previously, and I think everyone listening to this knows, under federal OSHA, employers were required to report to OSHA any work-related fatality, as well as the in-person hospitalization of three or more employees from sort of a catastrophic event of some sort. OSHA has changed those reporting requirements in this new rule, and all employers need to be aware of this. These reporting requirements apply to all employers, not simply those that are required to keep OSHA record-keeping logs. The changes are as follows. Now, all employers are required to report, obviously, continue to report work-related fatalities within 8 hours. But in addition, within 24 hours, employers are required to report to OSHA the following. One is inpatient hospitalizations of one or more people from a work-related incident. All amputations, as defined by the standard, as well as any eye loss incidents. So OSHA has really sort of expanded the category of injuries and illnesses that must be reported affirmatively to the agency. From what we understand is happening, OSHA is getting a significant volume and number of employer reports across the country. So obviously this rule is having the intended effect. OSHA wanted to learn of more of these happenings that are going on in workplaces, and they've accomplished that at least in the very near term. So all employers must report now, as opposed to last year, all inpatient hospitalizations of one or more people, amputations, and eye loss. And these must be reported within 24 hours. The other thing that's coming up is not really a change, but it is obviously the annual posting period for OSHA record-keeping summary information. Everyone who's listening to this obviously knows, particularly those who have to keep OSHA record-keeping logs, that at the end of the calendar year, you are required to look at your injuries and illnesses and calculate summary statistics of those injuries and illnesses and post those at your workplace, the OSHA 300A, from February 1st to April 30th. This is a yearly requirement, and obviously this is coming up, and so all employers need to have done this. One thing that I would make sure that employers do is they have to actually certify the accuracy of their record-keeping logs at this time as well and before posting. So everyone should be looking at their logs, checking, auditing them, making sure that they are accurately reflecting the injuries and illnesses that are occurring in the worksite, and then obviously posting these as well from February 1st to April 30th. So keep that requirement in mind and make sure that it doesn't slip over the next few days. So those are the OSHA record-keeping happenings. Obviously, one big change and then one sort of annual requirement that folks need to keep in mind. The other thing that oftentimes happens around this time of year is flu season picks up. And there's a lot of information out there, a lot of guidance material related to the issue. And we thought maybe we'd talk a little bit about some flu prevention, what people are saying, some tips for all employers to do to try to minimize the spread of that in the workplace. And Nicole Winnett will talk through those issues.
Thanks, Brad. I just want to also reiterate, Brad, that we're really enthused about this new format for getting information out to employers, and we welcome anybody's feedback on topics that they would like us to talk about or whether they like this new format. But yes, Brad's right, we're now in the middle of flu season, and as we've all noticed in the news reports, this is a particularly bad flu season. CDC indicates that 43 states are currently experiencing either high or widespread flu activity. And usually the flu peaks in February, so we're right in the middle of flu season. So this is a good time to take a step back and think about how you as an employer are addressing the flu and the sick employees within your workplace. OSHA and the CDC have very similar guidance and have issued guidance related to how what employers can do to prevent the spread of flu and handle sick employees within their workplace. Obviously, promoting vaccination, that's a big one that both OSHA and the CDC usually want employers to do, is to make the flu vaccine available to its employees and recommend that employees get that vaccination. Now, this year's flu, actually, the vaccination doesn't match up perfectly with this season's flu, so it's not a perfect match. I've heard that it protects about 30% of people from the flu, but that's at least a 30% benefit to everyone who does receive the vaccination, especially those in high-risk groups such as people over the age of 55. Another recommendation that the CDC and OSHA have is obviously encourage sick workers to stay home. I think we all know that, and I'm particularly bad about this, is that when I'm sick, I feel like I should still be working. But really encourage your employees to stay home. The CDC recommends that workers who have a fever and respiratory symptoms stay at home for at least 24 hours after the fever ends, or you know, a lot of their symptoms have subsided or aren't at their peak. So, you know, that's a particularly good one that I think employers can do, is have a policy in place that you want your employees to stay home when they are sick or when they believe that they may get sick, to help reduce the effect that it may have on the other population in your work site. Another recommendation that the CDC and OSHA have is, you know, obviously promoting good hand hygiene and cough etiquette. And there's lots of cute posters and guidelines that OSHA and the CDC have that can be posted around the work site to sort of remind employees about what the proper hand hygiene and cough etiquette should be. And, you know, how long to wash your hands and those sorts of things. So those are excellent guides if you want to sort of put those up in the bathrooms or in the common areas, such as lunchrooms and those sorts of things. Also may want to consider providing things such as obviously soap and water, alcohol-based hand rubs, disposable towels, cleaning and sanitation materials. Make those widely available to your employees. No-touch waste baskets for used tissues and those sorts of things are also recommended to help reduce the spread of the flu within your work site. Another thing that OSHA and the CDC recommend is obviously keeping the workplace clean and doing a little bit of sanitation of common touched areas and work surfaces such as telephones, doorknobs, lunch areas, microwaves, countertops, copiers, stairwell railings and elevator buttons are big ones that you can spend just a few minutes sort of wiping down with a alcohol-based, you know, sanitizing chemical or something of that nature to help keep those areas clean and prevent the spread as well. Educating workers about the flu and conditions that place them at high risk is also another recommendation. You know, just informing employees just generally about what the signs and symptoms and complications of the flu, why, you know, what the policies and procedures are at your work site, what some of the, you know, perhaps the supplies that you can make available to employees and, you know, vaccinations when they're available that you recommend that they be taken and those sorts of things. Also, another issue that OSHA thinks all employers should consider is, you know, addressing the flu for employees who travel and what they should do if they are sick while on travel. Again, just, you know, letting your employees know what the policies and procedures are, advising, you know, their supervisor if they become ill or don't feel well while traveling, perhaps letting workers know that if they're in a high-risk group that they may want to consider seeking, and while on travel, they may want to consider seeking some kind of a medical attention, and obviously letting their supervisors know, and then, of course, staying home until they feel well again. So those are some things to just keep in mind as we hit the peak season for the flu. And, you know, like I said, go on to the CDC and OSHA's website for more information or for posters and other materials that you can post around your work site or pass out to your employees. All right, and I think that's it for me on the flu.
All right, thanks, Nicole. To just restate what Nicole was saying, we are excited about this new format. We hope to be posting these frequently. And would welcome feedback from the listeners on content, ideas, whether you like it or not, and we're really interested in hearing from you on this as well. Thanks a lot, and I hope this was informative, and look out for the next episode of the OSHA Law Blog Live. Thank you.